not real. Call the meeting to order.
Great.
Nights with a camel, man. After all these years. Okay, it is Wednesday, June 18th, and this is the SCAC. And she is there. You want to do a roll call?
Councilmember Conan?
Present.
Councilmember Harrison? Excused. Councilmember Cabrera?
Here.
Councilmember Sard?
Here.
Chair DeGrange?
Present.
And the forum.
Thank you. Okay, we have a very full agenda tonight. A lot of topics that we probably will have a lot of discussion about. So if people want to talk and provide comments, I think we'll probably have to limit it to 2 minutes per comment. And the public comments, which are the first ones, are only for those things within the jurisdiction of the SCIC and for only those items that are not on the agenda. We're used to meeting in the cafeteria, which has a restroom right there. The restroom that's available to us tonight and next month is probably the farthest corner of the school, as far away as you can walk outside, and it's at the very end of the building they call the 300 mat. And so those, I think, will be unlocked through the end of the meeting, right?
They will be. And if you imagine this as an L, kind of an upside down L or a backwards seven, just walk straight down, turn right, keep going, you will run into that.
And they sort of face the field.
They face actually the little playground.
Okay, perfect. Okay. The other thing that we're going to have a slight change to the agenda. Item number four is discussion of possible action to work with Caltrans and Alameda County Public Works. The Sheriff's Office has recommended a sign saying local traffic only from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. And the speaker for item seven is also talking about traffic in the downtown area. So we'll move that item up. I think that I might have put it early for you, for the Sheriff's
Office. It's going to be our operation if it is. Because it's traffic. So it'd be a CHP responsibility. I know we haven't been here, there's been a lot going on, but it would be something that CHP would be responsible for because it is traffic.
Can you stay until item seven?
Yep.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay. So then the next item on the agenda is public comments, open forum, public announcements. And we have two speakers who have asked to provide public comment. And
first time,
maybe three. Okay. And you may have noticed we have an interpreter here, and the interpreter has been requested for all of our meetings going forward. We'll try and accommodate location, and we might have to work on that a little bit to make it most convenient. Okay. And they will be right next to the speaker, so. Hopefully, I left some room there. So, Kelly, you're the first speaker for 2 minutes. Items not on the agenda.
I'm also with the Mission Peak Conservancy, so we like to protect access to parks and trails, and it seems like the gate for the Thermalito Trail is locked. So anytime a gate anywhere gets closed to a park, we get very concerned. So we're trying to figure out what's going on there.
It's locked, is that what you said?
Yeah, there's some, and says something about there's no private right of, there's a sign on there says that on the lock, and it says that some people are unhappy about Hillcare Woods Homeowners Association. They're unhappy about that. And I'm not 100% sure. I'm assuming it's a gate that when you go up from Sinol up the Thermalito Trail, that there's a gate there, and that's the one that they locked. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's a different gate that they locked. I'm not sure on the sign it says something about they're not sure if there's any private right of access to that gate. But that's a narrower claim, because it seems like there's a, you know, if you look at their map, it shows a public right of access, shows that there's a the public trail going up from the Thermalito up kind of up from Foothill Road and from downtown Sinol. So yeah, if anybody has any information about what's going on with the with this locked gate, I'll show you the sign that that's out there. The here we go. So and if you read all the fine print here, it's written by and for lawyers. So it's a little bit. Yeah. So there's something going on here. Of course, we're very confused about this because this thing, people have been walking up and down in there, entering for that park has been there for 40 years, some maybe, and people were probably going there for another 100 years before that. Okay. Yeah. So, you know,
thank you, Phil.
How is it that all of a sudden, after 140 years, there's a problem?
Okay, Vic Lottier, where are you? There you go.
Golden Park.
Yeah, so I'm also here about the gate, because I also don't understand why it's closed. In fact, if you look at the gate, it's an accessibility issue. It's one of the few accesses onto the ridge that anyone can hike if they're old, if they've got kids, if they have disability issues. It's flat, it's compact, there isn't much of a gradient. And it actually violates one of the mission, vision, and values of East Bay Regional Park, which says that it's one of its core values is to improve access and use of the parks by members of groups that are underrepresented, such as persons with disabilities, economically disadvantaged, and elderly park visitors. The other point I want to raise is if it hadn't been for people living in Sinol and Kilpair Roads and Save Our Sinol, East Bay Regional Park District wouldn't even have the Pleasanton Ridge under their remit because it arrived because of an action taken by Save Our Sinol in 1983. And how tragic and ironic it is that many of the locals who live in Kilpair Woods can no longer access Sinbad Creek or Turtle Pond, yet it's 500 feet from their door. And the only access for them, if they do want to do it, is to go up the ridge, go up and down two hills, and go down two very narrow pathways. It's a 7-mile hike, and it's really treacherous, which if you see this on my leg, is exactly what happened to me. I fell down the trail, went down 20 feet. It caused an alert on my phone, and I ended up with, thankfully, the sheriff's department at my front door wanting to know if I was still alive. So we've now prevented people to have access. The very people who created the park in the first place for us are access for that. And then finally, the entire purpose of East Bay Regional Parks is to protect and provide access. And that's something else that by closing the gate, they've denied. There is nothing open or inclusive about what they've done. Again, another vision of a mission, vision and value point on the website that they claim to be about open, inclusive processes. And this is neither. I will end with 4 seconds to spare.
Can I, is there just a big lock on this thing?
There is now 3 padlocks. There is a padlock on the gate.
Okay.
And there are 2 padlocks locking both of the green legalese signs to other side of the gate.
I'm going to talk briefly about the gate. The gate that I'm talking about is on at the end of Kilcare Road into Pleasanton Ridge Regional Park. I don't know about the Thermalito gate, so I'm going to check that one out. But basically on May 31st, the Pleasanton Ridge Operations Supervisor decided to lock the gate because he was uncertain. Signs were posted that there was Homeowners Association exclusive access to it. I think those were something that the association had put on years before. But anyway, my point is that we in Kilcare Woods have had access to the land that's up there for over 100 years now. We were incorporated in 1927. And especially even more recently, as Victoria mentioned, we are part of the Sinol group that worked to save the ridge from development back in 1983. What you may not know is that in 83 and 84, we had such a good relationship with people who were becoming the park operations supervisors that they invited us to have our own gate, which we funded and installed to the requirements that the park district had. So we've enjoyed, we and fellow Sonolians have enjoyed what, at least 40 years to up to 100 years of access that we would like to get back again. So
who owns the gate?
Pardon?
Who owns the gate?
Well, we found, you know, like 40-year evidence, that 1983, that we purchased the gate at the invitation of the park operations supervisor as appreciation for giving us access because of all the work that had been done by Sonol and people up there also. I mean, it's for Sonolians in general use it.
That's all the public comments we have. In response to that, should we invite Park District?
That would be a good idea.
Wouldn't it? Yes.
Invite the Park District.
I think it's a good idea. Let's find out why the lock run.
We I guess what I forgot to say was that we did last Friday engage our elected representative for Sonol East Bay Regional Park District board member, Olivia San Wong, and she came out as well as previous board member Jocelyn Combs, and actually came out to the site, and we reviewed the situation and showed them the gate and talked about our history. So I would think that she would be the person to reach out to, but as far as, I mean, she's our elected representative.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Over.
Yeah.
Rightly so.
Well, in July, we're talking about evacuations. So that'll be a full meeting, but if we can fit it in early. Okay.
That possibly will be an evacuation route.
It is an emergency evacuation and for the people on Kilcare Road because of the fact that fire engines, if they stop in the road, nobody can, from up above can come down. So.
So it means there's 8 padlocks and 3 chains on it now.
And it is an emergency gate. When I had access to that gate, I sometimes scout that area because it was part of our emergency evacuation. I have an East Bay key and that gets me through there.
You get through all the locks.
Yeah.
And you got bolt tests as well?
Yeah. Yeah. East Bay.
Alameda County Sheriff's Office, right on 1-1.
Yeah.
And I think Sergeant Petrini's not here. Did he send you?
On vacation, I'm here for him.
Okay, cool. Yes.
Deputy Butler with the Sheriff's Office.
Okay, do you have a report for us?
I do, yes.
Come on up.
Come on down.
Come on down.
Okay, you'll have to excuse me. This is my first meeting I've attended here. So I'll go over the calls for service and proactive actions that we've taken since the last meeting. So 78 patrol checks, about 40 proactive stops, which include traffic stops and pedestrian stops, and numerous patrol checks and business checks throughout the area, totaling 182 actions that were logged with dispatch. Just some notable things. May 21st, we had coffee with the sheriff at Sonol Coffee downtown. It was very successful. The sheriff was able to meet many of the local residents here who wanted to get to know her, and some of them wanted to address concerns with our boss. And then on the 30th of May, there was Heroes Day here at Sonol Glen. It was successful. Many law enforcement agencies, not just the sheriff's office, were involved. I was here with my partners from the Tri-Valley Substation. We had our UAV unit. We had our SWAT team. It was great. We handed out stickers, got to meet the kids. And then on June 4th, we had our 2005 annual first responder liaison meeting at the SF Water District Water Temple here in Sonol. I think it went really well. It's great to collaborate with our law enforcement and other first responder partners. And we kind of plan out this fire season if there were to be a major fire in Sonol or this region, even Santa Clara County. Some other activities I had a trailer recovery for a local business. It was a couple month investigation that ended with the recovery of a trailer, an expensive trailer. It was about a $15,000 trailer. It's not often that these stories come out as successful. So that was really nice to get a local business here in Sunol back their trailer. It was found in San Leandro of all places, which my point is with this is video surveillance, especially if it's live, is super important for law enforcement. It gives us a heads up to look for a certain suspect or a suspect vehicle. So for the local businesses, you may want to think about that for your security. Another thing is scams. We've been having many scams in unincorporated Alameda County, including Sunol. So be careful who you're transferring money to. Be careful with cryptocurrency. A lot of money has been funneled out of people's accounts. It's very difficult to recover those funds. And it's fire season, so have a plan. Other than that, if you have any questions, feel free to ask me.
Is it my imagination or that number of calls is higher than normal? That seems higher than normal.
So that includes all types of logged activities,
right.
182 for that time. I can't really speak on if it's high because Sergeant Petrini is the one that usually attends the meeting.
So is that for the whole Eden substation?
No, this is personal. So this includes, doesn't include like things that are active calls, like could be a business check or a patrol check, which we log with radio and on our computers every time, right? Like if we go visit downtown Sunol, we'll log a patrol check just as a security check. So all these events are logged. Probably about a third of them are requiring some sort of law enforcement action, but we tend to log business checks and patrol checks, which take up a big portion of this.
Or rescues.
Absolutely. Welfare checks.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Question here.
I got a question. Sure. You talked about the security cameras. What about license plate readers?
Yes. There are. So I'm not sure how much I could talk about this, but we do have some of that technology around Sunol, and those are super important for us. I think my supervisor, Mark Petrini, is better to talk about that.
In private residents and private business owners?
I'm not sure about technology for license plate readers, surveillance cameras. If it's clear enough footage, we can zoom in on a license plate. So if you have that, that's great for law enforcement.
So that's, we're allowed to have license plate readers? It's legal to have?
You're legal to have surveillance in a public area. And if it's from your business facing the street, that's legal as far as I'm concerned. But I'm not a lawyer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chief Tara, do you have anything to share?
Good evening, everyone. So since our last meeting, 31 calls for service out of Station 14. As I like to report, the majority are EMS. That means we're keeping our fire volume down. It was right at about 74% this time period. We did have 4 fires, 2 were vehicle, and 2 were vegetation, and no, I have no information. It was not our fire. The 2 fires that I'm referring to are the one that was down Niles Canyon and the one that occurred on the day of the Sunol Water Temple meeting, hence why you didn't have some of the fire folks that you did, because we responded out Calderas to that incident. So those are the 2 that I was referring to, and the vehicle fires were the vehicle fires. So we are in fire season, folks. Do not mow on a hot day. Do not do any vegetation management activities after 10 a.m. Do not do any vegetation management activities on a high fire danger or anytime there is wind. Because your actions of doing your own vegetation management, your mowing or otherwise, could cause a fire. if one arc or one spark gets out of way. Yes, ma'am.
What are some ways we could prevent sparks, as you just mentioned? Just good, responsible, habits, like not dragging your chains on your vehicles.
Right. What I was specifically referring to is people that are trying to, are behind or for whatever reason didn't get their vegetation management done, and they're out with a weed whacker trying to do their vegetation management now, and it hits a rock and creates an arc or a spark, or hits something, a piece of metal, piece of glass, or something that was in the grass they didn't even know was there that creates an arc or spark. As far as general practices, general fire safety practices, make sure that you do not use any fireworks, that you discard smoking material in an approved container, that you do not have chains that drag as you drive, that anything you have, such as a generator, a automobile, otherwise make sure that it has the correct spark arrestor on it, and that catalytic converter on a car, you don't pull over into dry grass and vegetation and start a fire that way. And make sure you do not leave even a fire in your barbecue unattended. Make sure that you only burn in approved containers, like a barbecue pit. We shouldn't be seeing, outdoor bonfires right now or things of that nature. So just general good precautions. When in doubt, consider, do you need to do it that way? And do you need to do it at all? Because we are in the height. We have been able to get a handle on everything because right now there's low volume of fires and there's a lot of staffing right now. But as the fires come in, that will change the scenario, but we're trying to jump on everything that comes in. Okay. Any other questions? And I, like I said, CAL FIRE, if they were here, would be the ones to ask about the other fire.
Yeah, and I don't see Chief Appleson.
No, and I don't know if he's online.
Four people. Okay. Well, give him a chance. Raise his hand if he's there.
All right.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay. Next item is fire safety. Is Rosemary here? Don't see her. Okay. Jim O'Loughlin called me and said he does not have a report tonight.
I have a little statement for him then.
Oh, you have a statement for him?
Yeah. He has a bonanza of milkweed that is, I think, available to anybody who wants some little milkweed starters. It's the proper type that monarch butterflies like, and it's a special, I think it's a native California one that starts earlier in the year than most, and it's what they want. And the idea is to distribute these starters. We'll be putting some this weekend around in the park, but there are plenty available, I believe, to anybody who would like, a half dozen or to try putting. The idea is if you put them in a bunch of different places, a few of them will naturalize. You'll actually get a natural, repeating, self-sustaining population. And that's what you really need. It can't depend on somebody doing this every year. But if you distribute them, everybody takes a half dozen and tries doing it themselves. Some of them are going to take, and that's what you want to do.
So how do people contact? Who do they contact to get them?
Well, Jim O'Loughlin and Kristen Boberts are both kind of the leads.
Okay.
On that.
Do we have an access area for these plants? We just go pick them up, or
I don't know. I mean, it was just kind of out of place to mention it, but he would be saying that very here.
Okay.
So
maybe we can get that information and get it out.
Yeah.
I see Andrew's just walked in, so maybe that's how we can do that.
Yeah, Andrew, you know about the
The milkweed?
The milkweed.
Sure.
So
I still know the details, but I'd be happy to send it out.
Well, so it's in Andrew's, all the information is in Andrew's
post. Informs an old post?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay. And Benjamin had to work late today, so he's unable to make it. So, go to item three, council staff comments. So there was a flood protection meeting at the end of May, and I think you went to it. Did you have a report out on that?
Yeah, just a little report out. So remember when we...
So that one was the one with Zone 7.
This was just Zone 7. Zone 7, just a little background to remind folks, they put out a flood management plan, and this is part of their phase two updates. This section that they were reporting out on were the the results of their comprehensive evaluation. So I would like to mention first off, though, that there were two Sinoleans who came to the meeting for public comments, Debbie Ferrari and Ken Horton, and I believe they are still trying to put pressure on local agencies to figure out, you know, who's really responsible for Sinole and our Sinole flooding problems. For Zone 7, we do realize that they are really just responsible, as they say, for the water that starts by Verona Bridge, so about two and a half miles out. But the question that both Debbie and Ken were asking, well, so if there's issues in those areas, who's responsible when it comes into our area? And they were concerned about, that the Sinole Glen can't build behind the school, and that Zone 7 maybe should be responsible for the damage or should pay for the damage. And what, you know, how can they mitigate the dramatic flows? So basically, they had an extensive update to their modeling. They focused on damages outside flood channels. They identified areas of high risk, and they quantified the risk in those areas. And then basically, their output was their risk and cost damages will continue to increase into the future with no action. Risk results help to focus areas of priority. Flood risk is generally not life-threatening. They need to balance benefits, project costs, and residual risk. And if you go online to zone7water.com, they have a lovely color map of the results of their analysis. And tonight, I believe they meet tonight. So I think tonight for their next steps were to figure out solutions. How are they going to address these issues that they came up with in their evaluation? And that should be available soon as well. That's pretty much it.
Are they including Sinole in their evaluations?
Well, they are including the areas that they are responsible for. And so, yes.
They're responsible for all of this. And the answer is yes. So I have a little update from Valerie as well.
And you also had a separate meeting with Zone 7.
Perfect. So this is perfect tie-in. It says, for Zone 7, we had a board workshop and the results of the updated modeling on May 21. That's the meeting you referred to. And Rodney and Ken and Debbie were there, and we encourage other Sinoleans to join them. Information about the board meeting is available on their webpage. The URL is here if you'd like it. The recording of that meeting will be available soon. Their next board workshop will be on August 20th. So I don't believe there's a thing tonight, but I could be wrong. But she let me know August 20th, and that's when the board will discuss flood risk reduction objectives and the criteria to rate and evaluate projects to meet those objectives. So I encourage you all to participate in that. Our office, Alameda County Supervisor David Halbert, held a meeting on May 22nd. In that meeting, present were representatives of Supervisor's office and Supervisor himself, and representatives of Caltrans, Zone 7, Alameda County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, County CDA, that's our community development agency, SFPUC, so San Francisco Public Utilities, and East Bay Regional Parks District. Unfortunately, one of the things we did learn in that meeting is that Caltrans was not able to secure approval for the permits that are required for them to go into waterways. So their Highway 84 bridge replacement project will unfortunately not be starting this summer. And I let Connie know that upon finding that out. And our next step in our office is to have a follow-up meeting with Zone 7 and Alameda County Flood Control and Water Conservation District, and have that scheduled in July. We also are going to have Caltrans circle back with Cal Fire to look into what they can do to do vegetation management and fuels reduction this summer in the creek bed size. There's probably a term for that, but I don't work in water, where they wouldn't be required to have a permit to get all the stuff that could in a storm wind up in the river and clogging the river to hopefully get it managed and reduce the risk of fire as well as flood issues. And we wanted to remind everybody, if you have a dying or failing tree on your property, that you can contact us or Public Works to get the appropriate tree removal permit in order to get it removed. And Public Works does have a list of providers on their website for companies that are vetted to help you remove dead and damaged trees. And that we also wanted to explore the idea of providing mini grants for private property owners that have a responsibility on their private property to manage their waterway, keep it maintained and clear of debris, and get the necessary permits to do so. Our office is looking into getting you mini grants to help cover those costs.
Andrew?
Are we doing a Q&A?
Go ahead, Andrew.
Coming out of the meeting that David held that Lindsay took care of it until David made it there, it was clear that David took the action item, and obviously Lindsay's going to have to do all the work to find a solution to them. The one thing I want to suggest is that when it comes to Caltrans, David has told me he doesn't have much power, and we have to rely on a relationship with Alex Lee, who's been delightful. And so once we have it, what we really need, we can ask Alex Lee's office to step in. But we've had numerous conversations about this. There's a lot of people working on this. And we're not going to let this fail. And we're not going to let this affect Sunola in the long term. Both Connie and I have talked about that. And we're going to do whatever it takes, and we're going to do whatever it takes to support you, Lindsay, on this project.
Did you have anything else to share?
I don't, unless there's any other questions.
For the scheduling thing, it's I got June today, 7 p.m. public meeting of the Zone 7 Board of Directors.
That's what I thought, yeah.
So I was wondering if maybe today is a different topic, and the one that she told me about is specific to flooding in this area and the objectives and the necessary.
I thought tonight was determining solution, a work group to figure out potential solutions.
Hmm. Yeah, this email says okay. August
20th. Okay.
She sends it to me on Monday.
Sure.
Yes, correct. Yeah, it's correct. Yeah, it says August 20. Do you think she meant?
We were hearing July, but
yeah,
or June or something.
Yeah, okay. But we can check tonight. It'll be
It's all public information. Absolutely.
Also attached to the agenda is Swalwell's Representative Swalwell's forwarding our grant request to any sort of downtown Sunol. I think that was also reported in the newspaper too. So to make sure you're aware that we're still working on that and that's moving along, and I appreciate his support. That was something where I got notification that the application had to be in 2 days. So we quickly got it in and he's forwarded on. So also, we did get notification that PG&E and Caltrout are moving ahead. I think Andrew sent this out to everybody, but that's really good news. We've been working on that for 12 years to try and get all of Oliver De Silva Quarry, which is SMP 30, to protect the resources in that area and replant the plants that had been destroyed during the just cutting the quarry, digging the quarry. So that's what's really significant about that is that in 23, I think it was March of 23, we were told, oh, we're just waiting for SFPUC. SFPUC's holding it up. So I had a follow-on meeting with them and learned that it wasn't just SFPUC. There's PG&E who had to relocate their gas line and the concrete cover that was over it that actually forms a dam on Alameda Creek. So that is going to start this year. They're going to start working on that. So that's good news. And then that also means that Oliver De Silva can start restoring the vegetation on the banks of the quarry.
Tony, really quick. To that end, I want to congratulate you on your work. You don't have a lot of authority, but you managed to herd the cat to get that done. And so I think it would be in order for everyone in the room to join me in giving Connie a hand for her hard work in getting that done.
Also the grant.
That's true. Awesome. Yeah. Hopefully
that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Item 4 is a discussion, is a follow-up to the sheriff's recommendation to have a sign about cut through traffic. But our item 7 is also about traffic in the downtown area of Sonol. So for those people that came in late, I wanted to let you know that number 4 is going to be postponed to after item 6. Okay, item 6 is discussion of possible action to reapprove the Community Improvement Fund purchase of a prototype wayfinding sign that meets the county's requirements for breakaway supports. We've already approved this. I forget what the old amount was. Was it 8,000 or 6,000? I don't remember. But anyway, we already approved it. But now we have a new price of $10,168.53. So that new request is attached, as well as the proposal for Golden Gate Signs.
Good question. What's the increase in cost from the old numbers? Do you happen to know the percentage or approximately?
I think it was 20%. It was 8,000 before.
And did this come from a requirement from the county?
Yes.
Can you say a little bit more about that, and if you don't mind? I'm putting you on the spot, but I just wondered if you know.
It's not that I'm on the spot. That's not the problem. So the sign that we had agreed to purchase is a prototype sign so that we can get feedback from the community as to what they thought of the sign, what should be on the sign. And at that point, we thought we'd get input from the county also, but we got input for that before we ordered the sign, which is probably a good thing, that if a vehicle runs into the sign, and these are not signs necessarily for vehicle direction, but pedestrians and everybody else. And it will be a sign behind the white picket fence in the parking lot across the street from the train station. But if a car was to run into that sign, the base would break off and not damage the car, or not damage the car too much. Is there any discussion?
So we're now pondering the breakaway sign cost.
The cost that includes the breakaway feature.
Yeah, they changed the regulations so that there's no liability they concern. So essentially jacked up the price because we've got to do it the way they want it done in order to be safer by their standards, which is what you said about the breakaway and the lighting and the materials and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Ben's got all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But you got called away, so we're going through it without him.
Yeah.
I have a motion to approve.
Any second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Do we do a roll call?
Councilmember Conant?
Approve.
Councilmember Harrison, excuse. Councilmember Tannenbaum?
Approve.
Councilmember Stark?
Approve.
Chair DeGrange?
Approve. Thank you very much. Item six is a request for $204.62 to replace the mount that holds the monitor up in the cafeteria. Right now, it's a very rigid mount, and we want to make sure that would prefer to have a mount that tilts to eliminate the glare from the overhead lights and also swivels so it can face the audience better. trying to prove his ability. Any discussion?
Nope.
Any seconds?
I'll second.
We have a roll call.
Councilmember Kent Bromwell.
Approve.
Councilmember Conant.
Approve.
Councilmember Harrison, excuse. Councilmember Stark.
Approved.
Chair DeGrange.
Approve. I think that'll help our meetings. Okay. And here we are, item four. Now, Amber Lowe, you are the speaker for item six. Seven. Did you include this item in your presentation?
It mentions it.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's the same issue as the substance.
Would you like to include it? Let her speak about it first, and then
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. Okay.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Amber Lowe. I'm with the Public Works Agency. I'm the Deputy Director for the Department of Transportation there. And I'm here to talk with you tonight about the pedestrian access and traffic improvements in Sunol. The Public Works Agency is in support of the community's goals, and we're here to work with you on your concerns related to pedestrian access and also traffic improvements. And I'm here tonight to walk through some of the concepts in the Sunol Downtown Revitalization Plan. And
Hold on a minute. The air conditioning is really loud, so let me just turn it off. And
we have no mics tonight.
No.
Yes.
I'll try to project my voice more.
Some of us are wearing hearing aids, so
that would help. It warms up. Okay. Turn it back on.
I'm here to walk through some of the concepts from the Sunol Downtown Revitalization Plan and explain what is feasible from the engineering standpoint. The first item that I want to talk about is the traffic calming that was proposed, the traffic calming recommendations that were approved recommended in the Downtown Revitalization Plan. And the plan says to suggested to reduce vehicle speeds by using like lane narrowing, curb extensions, and other calming measures such as race crosswalks and these other items. Generally, like for engineering considerations, space availability and drainage is very important because a lot of these proposed improvements they create a physical barrier and then they might block drainage and stuff. And usually raised crosswalks, they also serve as a speed hump. And you can't really have ADA compliance with like, you know, because we put in slots in the speed humps that we install for emergency vehicle access, like fire trucks. And so if you were to have a crosswalk, they would like the pedestrian path through the crosswalk will go up and down. You can visualize that. So usually we don't recommend like the crosswalk be combined with the speed humps. Some locations, yes, they might be appropriate if they don't impact emergency vehicle access, but usually we don't do that. Some other items that we can explore from our traffic calming toolbox might be radar speed survey sign, speed feedback signs, sorry, and refreshing some of the striping and installing visual narrowing techniques. And then we'll also continue to coordinate with the CHP on enforcement of speed limits and other traffic laws, and also like such as stop compliance. Next slide, please. Next are the crosswalk related improvements from the SDRP. The revitalization plan proposes to relocate some of the existing crosswalks to align with the pedestrian desired locations where there's like proposed sidewalk layouts, and new crosswalks were proposed in the plans where there's pedestrian activities that's expected to increase, such as like near the depot or parking areas. And then also this is to enhance visibility and aesthetics with decorative striping and materials. And also the plan proposes to include curb extensions to shorten crossing distance and calm traffic. So some of the considerations when we install crosswalks is that the currently where the crosswalks are, they serve access to, you know, the existing private properties, like where the driveways are, where the gateways are to that parking lot across the street from the railroad station. And so when we install these, we have to consider the visibility, like when we alter locations, and then also, like if construction, full construction is not feasible, we can do striping-based curb extensions also. And we'll evaluate potential new crosswalk locations based on available site distance, pedestrian demand, and also drainage feasibility. Next sidewalk, please. Sorry, the next slide. For sidewalk installation, the community's goal, according to the plan, is to complete sidewalk gaps to improve walkability, especially along Main Street and key destinations. We're in support of this, definitely, like to build continuous pedestrian paths. Some of the considerations for sidewalk is that you have the existing grade where everything's flowing, everything is smooth and flat. But once you create a sidewalk, it raises it several inches. And so like with existing buildings there, some of the consideration might be like, then you'll have, it'll be higher than the existing entrance to the building. So when we design the project, we'll look into it deeper. We'll like, do a survey, do TOEFL and stuff. And if it's not feasible to install sidewalk, we might want to work with you guys to, consider other options, such as like keeping what is there and maybe creating like a barrier so that there's a safe path for pedestrians. Because I know like in the plan, there is a, one of the conceptual sketches is you wanted to, in front of the cafe, I think, put in parallel parking instead of the existing perpendicular parking. And so that's one of the locations that might have this drainage issue if you change the grade with a construction sidewalk. Okay, so this next item, the traffic issue, is I think the same as what we're proposing number four on the agenda today. So it was brought to our attention, there's some concerns about traffic cutting through Main Street from State Route 84, where that island is right there. One of the proposed solutions is to restrict right turn so that people during the afternoon commute when the issue is existing, then they can't make the right turn there and then rejoin the traffic cutting through Main Street. But that if we were to do that, we will have to coordinate with Caltrans to install like additional warning signs to let people know about certain hours they cannot do that, so that they don't get off, they'll stay on Highway 84. That'll require Caltrans coordination, and most likely they'll require us to do some kind of traffic study, provide them, like let them know what the impact is. And then another option might be restricting the left turn from Main Street so that they can, once they're there, they cannot join back the traffic on State Route 84. So they can't like cut through. They after a while they'll learn that they cannot rejoin. So next time they won't do that anymore. But all of these things, like both of these options, they require Caltrans coordination. Also, we want the community to know that most likely these kind of improvements will impact the whole community. So like the locals and also like commuters alike. So we want to take that into consideration when we do the traffic study and stuff and see what the impacts are to everyone. And next slide, please. Other considerations, curb ramp, sidewalk, and pedestrian paths around the plaza like I said earlier, they must meet ADA and engineering standards. So a lot of the sketches that were in the plan, they're good ideas, and we'll work with you to meet the goals that those ideas are trying to achieve, but they might not be exactly as is shown in the revitalization plan. Evaluate safe crossing points in connection with event areas if traffic control changes are proposed. And then also, if we were to install street furniture in the right-of-way, they must not obstruct pedestrian flow and sight lines. And we recommend having like low maintenance furniture, so that, you know, replacement and stuff like that will be easier, because otherwise you'll end up with like long-term, you have to set up a long-term budget to replace those items. Yeah. And yeah, thank you. We understand the importance of balancing the community's vision with the technical feasibility of the infrastructure, and Public Works will continue to work with the community and support the walkability, access, and safety improvements in ways that are sustainable and constructible. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions and feedback.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for looking at a revitalization plan and considering it and going through it in detail. Right. I'm very happy to see that. It sounds like you're talking about wanting or needing to do more studies. What will it take to make that happen?
It depends on what it is. Like, say for traffic calming, installing speed humps, we want to like look at, you know, the location. We come out to the field and we look at it. We look at the traffic volume, accident data, and stuff like that. So some of them might be short term things that we do, and the studies would vary depending on what kind of item it is. If it's like actual physical construction, like design is involved, we'll have to do a survey so that we can design, because like, you know, drainage and stuff, we're talking not just like 2D, we're talking about 3D and stuff. And if we need to install like storm drain, like at the intersection where the wedding or event center is, that area, I don't know if you guys are aware, like all of that water drained towards the ramp. So pretty much it's like flat, it's relatively flat, and then it just drained toward that area. So if there's any kind of improvements that we, and so we want to keep that drainage existing, like where it goes, or, you know, if we have to install anything underground and stuff like that. But right now, I don't know how extensive the design might be to install these improvements that you guys want, so.
Any questions? The only question I have is on the traffic, in terms of what kind of a time frame we're looking at, that separate from improvements and sidewalks, that kind of thing.
We're talking about the cut through traffic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Time frame wise.
I heard that you guys try to reach out to the Caltrans. I mean, we can. I can't say I don't really know, but we can try to reach out to Caltrans also and see what is required. And with our agency has consultants that we can have to take a look and provide a traffic study if needed.
I mean, I think the cut through traffic issue is, yes, the design, the downtown improvement, that's terrific. The cut through traffic problem is a problem right now.
Is that going to affect the people who live in Sonoldo as well?
Well, yes.
So, I mean,
how do you get off of no left turn from Main Street back into Highway 4?
Yeah,
I mean, how do I get out of town when I live out of town? That's a question.
Yeah, I think that would be
a road.
But then the rest of them are going after the road.
It will affect everybody, and even whoever's actually like legitimately there, like the, you know, in the downtown area.
You know, I know sometimes they have those signs like local traffic only,
okay,
but I don't know how effective that is.
Yeah.
There is that one that when you turn left onto Foothill, you're not supposed to make a left.
Go from 5:30 a.m. at Castlewood.
Because I'm just thinking about people coming back. A lot of people go back and forth from Fremont Niles, and it might be kind of, or coming home from work, it might be kind of frustrating.
So the sheriff deputies thought it would be appropriate and effective to say no cut through traffic. And they could be there and they could see if somebody's come off 84 and then get back on 84. But have you thought about that?
You mean like at the island where the stop sign, the new stop sign is?
Before you even exit 84.
Oh, yeah.
So it'd be on the 84 off before the 84 off ramp. Big sign that says no cut through traffic on Main Street.
Those signs will be installed in Caltrans right of way because
yes,
they will be Caltrans. And then it depends on how CHP will be able to enforce that.
I can answer those when I come up.
Or maybe the timing of the stoplight needs to be improved also to get more traffic through.
Oh, the traffic signal?
Yeah,
that one belongs to Caltrans too. Yeah. So
both of the traffic.
One on Main Street,
Get out also the one at Four Corners.
That's
a long wait. It's sitting at a rate right now. So what do we put together a project plan? How do we move ahead? Somebody had told me there was a 2-year queue to have anything happen. So what's going on?
The pedestrian improvements, like right now we are working on an update to our pedestrian bicycle master plan. And then so we could include some of these improvements in there so that it will be part of the prioritized list. But in the meantime, we can start putting it in our queue of create projects in our project management system for some of these improvements, especially like the short term ones like the traffic calming. We can start looking into that and send somebody out.
So the question is, how long is the queue?
For the traffic calming, that could be immediate. Like, I could assign somebody to start
And then the next queue would be what?
The capital improvement projects, those will take longer because we have funding and
1 to 3 years, 2 to 4 years, what are we talking about?
I think 1 to 3 years would be reasonable, depending on what it is. And if we want to combine multiple locations, different improvements in the same area, so that if it's all concrete or something like that for cost effectiveness.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay.
And how would we know that things are moving ahead?
I can report back at a later time if you want me to come back.
Okay. One thing that is not a part of your presentation here is the speeding on Foothill. I don't know if you got a chance. I know we talked about it on the phone, but I don't know if you got a chance to look at it.
We had a work order. I have to follow up, but I know we submitted a work order to install a couple of the speed limit signs on there so that people coming out of that parking lot would know what the speed limit is. And then we can look at it again to see if that addressed some of the issue or decreased the speeding.
Can I make a comment on that? Wait. We have people who have already signed up to make comments.
Sign up.
Okay. Can you fill out a little card for me, Jamie? Okay. Do you have any more? Any council have any more comments?
Let's see. Who's been saying?
Yeah. Do you want me to stay back here and put notes, or if I go back to the
future? Well, you probably will be wanting to answer questions, so.
If you want me to.
Yes.
Stay back.
Sure. Okay. But if, I don't know about what the interpreter needs. Are you okay if she speaks in back of you?
Oh, no, I'll come back up.
Okay. Tom Knudsen, you had comments, and we're allowing 2 minutes.
My comment is primarily related to number 4. I think this is a horrible idea. It kind of strikes in terms of not in my backyard type of policy. I don't think we can forget that these are public roadways. Everybody who puts a gallon of gas in their tank pays for these roads. And Sunol residents don't have a monopoly over roads that may happen to go through their town. A lot of that traffic, I think, is related to the schools, and there's been a lot of talk about revitalizing downtown. Well, we have 3 or 4 new businesses that just opened up, and I would suspect that a lot of that traffic is good for them. And to divert that traffic for whatever reason that would impact those businesses, I think, goes against the revitalization of downtown. So I would urge this council to flatly reject that proposal or any no cut through signs or no right turn signs.
Kelly.
I don't know much about traffic, but I know what I see what's in front of my face. So I just drove in here. I saw a huge traffic jam. And then years ago, there was a similar huge traffic jam going on the state highway. And that was because of a stop sign. So then they put in the traffic light and that was supposed to make the traffic jams better. But obviously the traffic wasn't really moving at the moment I went through. And I bet you if I did a traffic study, I would find that the full utilization of the traffic volume of capacity, the intersection is not being utilized, and that a roundabout would make higher traffic volume flow through there. And that would be fine with me. In fact, if you look at what the county does at Mountain House, they said, fine, pay us $8 million. We don't need lots of plans and stuff. Give us the $8 million. We're going to build two roundabouts and Mountain House out on whatever, Passion Pass Road or whatever it's called. And it's proceeding. They took the money and they're gonna build roundabouts and figure out how to do it later. And then when it comes to this idea of, oh, we need traffic through the downtown, I've seen this happen in Hayward. They rebuilt their downtown to get lots of traffic flowing through the downtown. And now they're all very upset with that because it's not helping their businesses. They got an ocean of traffic coming through and they think it's destroyed their downtown. So, you know, you got to balance it. I'm all in favor of more traffic on the state highway, and you got to be careful with too much traffic in your downtown.
Thank you, Kelly. Jean?
For me.
Hi. I live on Foothill Road, west of Kilcare, and I have been trying for over 3.5 years to get speed limit signs on our street. I've written to Public Works. I have done everything I possibly could. I saw a guy come out to measure, and after that, nothing. It's been over a year. And so I've been going through this for 3.5 years. We have people speeding just to get to the park. We're talking, you know, sometimes 40 miles an hour. They speed down and then they realize, oh my God, this is a Niles Canyon. Turn around, speed back up and get onto Niles Canyon. So my complaint is, why is it taking so long? You know, we had Amber here. Oh, she must have
gone. She's right behind you.
Oh, I have you here. And I'm hoping that you can get us traffic, you know, speed limit signs and have a study as to what we can do about the traffic down our street. We're talking, it's really dangerous to be walking on our street. And so,
I'll follow up on that work order because David was out there measuring. As he mentioned, speaking to somebody, maybe that was you.
But that was a long time ago.
I saw someone recently, Jean.
Yeah.
Like a little bit more recently, I saw somebody doing something.
Yeah, I signed up on that work order a while ago. I'm not sure. I'll follow up and then I'll let Connie know. And then
all the other, you know, I don't know if the police can come out or...
Yeah,
you know, to check. Anyway,
thank you.
Speaking of the CHP coming out to check, do you want to speak on that?
Sure. Is there anything else, or I'll just come on up and be ready? So, sorry we haven't been here in a while. Staffing levels have been low. We've been doing a lot of training on new officers. We now have Officer Juan Alvarado Flores, who's going to start helping me in the afternoons on county roads. So he, this is today's his first day working this detail and shift. So in the coming weeks, I'll be working with him, showing him the different areas and stuff like that. So in the afternoons, we can try to tag team some areas and things and try to get more of a presence out here for you folks in the afternoons. Obviously, there's protests and things going on some days that may take us away. So we may not be able to be as responsive to calls because our staffing levels may drop when stuff like that happens. Fortunately, nothing right now is going on big in our areas. So we've been pretty good other than maybe on some weekends. So as of right now, it seems like we're okay, at least Monday through Friday when you guys are having your commute issues. My thing with the signs is, from what we've seen, when signs get put up, if you're trying to stop traffic from coming into town, you're going to create more of a backlog on 84. So you might be limiting the cars that come through town, but you're going to be sitting in traffic on 84 that much longer because now you're adding those cars into your congestion. If you do a no cut through sign, the only way we know if somebody's cutting through or locals only, anything like that, is we have to stop everybody. Because we don't know if you're local traffic unless we stop you. Now, some people don't mind it. They're like, hey, glad you're out here because you're one of who knows how many will stop that day. And if you're local, right, let you go. You're back on your way. You're going home. Yes, we had to delay you shortly. But then you do get people that go, I'm a local. Why are you stopping me? I shouldn't be getting stopped. I can't tell because I can't get an instant read on a license plate. I have to type it into the computer. It doesn't just scan it, read it, pop up, and tell me an address. Then a lot of it is you've got people who have P.O. boxes. That P.O. box is on their license. The only way I know if you're local is if I run your registration and your license and if you have a local address. So you can give me an address. Well, that's fantastic. I can Google some addresses and I can give them to you. If I'm a commuter trying to cut through and get away with it, I'm going to Google an address. If you do a no right turn, right? Now you've got more traffic going up Foothill. They're going to come around. They're going to cut down Bond and they're going to come right back out by the school and they're going to go back out. Dealing with commuters in the afternoon on back roads, they will find a way if that is what they want to do. I think the best thing to do would be try to see if you guys can get a petition. Amber can probably try to help. I'll try to take it back to my captain too and try to get Caltrans to look at the timing of the lights. That might be the easiest and quickest way to do something. We'll try to look into it. He's got contacts with Caltrans. So I'm going to take that back to him to try to ask about doing the timing of the lights and looking at those commute hours. And trying to realize traffic coming down Pleasanton Sinole or coming westbound on 84 in the afternoons could probably sit 30 seconds longer to allow another 10 or 15 cars to go eastbound. Will it work? I don't know. I'm not a Caltrans employee. AAA with a badge. Right? So I just know that the more you block people from side roads, the more traffic you're going to put on 84, which in turn may just create more issues. People driving down the shoulders, over double yellows, and getting more frustration before they even make it to Sinole. Again, not your problem. We'd be out there enforcing it. But you guys would be the ones potentially trying to come pick up children or waiting to just try to come home from work that were stuck now waiting because that outlet allowed 10, 15, 20, 30 cars to move forward. So now it's just going to cost you another couple cycles through that traffic light.
I have a question. There seems to be a lot of initial sort of blaming. It's a school problem. I go through this town at multiple times during the day, various times, and there's a little bit of congestion around school. The congestion really is a commute problem, not parents picking up their students,
I
see.
What I'm saying with that is the parents are now going to be stuck longer in traffic, potentially, with that cutoff. So you have parents who are going to now have to plan that. If you stop traffic from coming into Sinole, it's a potential. I'm not saying it's a dead set. Just from seeing things in other locations when signs get posted, it will create more congestion down Niles Canyon. If they're local coming down Foothill, coming down Kilcare, coming into the school, right, probably would be pretty nice. But if they're out in the surrounding communities and driving in to pick up children, that's where they will see that congestion. They'll be stuck waiting. Well, mostly it's eastbound Niles in the afternoon, right? In the mornings, I personally don't know much about the morning commute. I don't know if the left-hand turn through Sunol is really worth doing. I don't know if people cut through in the morning. I feel like that pushes further west.
In the morning, you get the Foothill to Kilcare and shoot on that way.
Right.
The Foothill people get hammered in the morning.
Yeah. And then in the afternoons, I know there's a lot that do dive off and go up Foothill and around. I personally haven't sat there long enough to tell you there's 37 cars in the afternoon and that's it. They cut to go back around Maine. I'm sure there's a decent amount. Because like I said, people are looking for any opportunity. They watch one person do it. Tomorrow, I'm going to try it. So it's just going to be something that people do. They follow each other. The lemur method, right? Yeah. So that's the way commutes are. A lot of people just follow GPS. And GPS says turn left, turn right, and they're not paying any attention. They'll get themselves stuck in the mud on someone's property because GPS said it was a route. I know I haven't heard calls in a while, but Palomar's, a lot of the commercial semi-trucks, if there's a big issue on the freeway, we'll get a lot of commercial trucks because GPS told them to go up Palomar's. So we can only fix so much when people follow technology. Right. People don't read signs. Obviously, we would like to try to do what we could to help you folks out. I think Caltrans with timing of the lights would probably be the easiest possibility to start with. I'll take that back to my commander. I would say pray and hope they finish the 84 construction. I think the northbound 680 to 84 construction, once that finishes up, it's supposed to be two lanes branching off of 680 and flowing right on through. If that bottleneck gets released, that could create a lot of flow on northbound 680 to where people coming through Fremont may not continue down 84 any longer. So it could, right, fingers crossed, could potentially relieve some of the traffic on the county road. I'm not saying give up on your efforts. I'm just saying pray and hope Caltrans gets going a little bit faster. But I do see issues with now putting up signs. You get people that will try to go other directions and just cut through other things. So where if it's a no right turn, Bond Road could start getting backed up with traffic. And I don't know if you really want the commute trying to flow down Bond. It may be better to keep them on Main. I don't know, right? I haven't done the studies. I just know when you cut off one stream, fish are going to find another way around.
Thank you for your input.
Yeah. Are there any other questions, concerns, something I missed? I know there was some things that came up. If you got it, let me know.
For speeders down Foothill, down towards Tyler Ranch, any chance of having someone check down there?
Yeah, so in the afternoons, now that there's two of us, we can try to come out here a little bit more often. When it was just me, between training and everything else, I've been lucky to just even be out of the office. So with two of us, we can try to come down and spend time focusing more in different areas and getting a better rotation around to do different things. Amber, what I was wondering, I don't know, is there a no through sign on there for traffic, like dead end?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
No accident.
Is there a sign that says 84 with an arrow pointing?
No.
So maybe an 84 that way sign would be more helpful if you're getting people that are just lost looking for Niles Canyon, and maybe something posted at Foothill at the intersection there will keep them just, oh, I need to make a turn. Anything else? Any other questions, comments?
Just a quick comment or from your opinion, you've got a finite amount of traffic that's coming on 84. If we had a time frame that said from 3 to 5 or something, you still think the comments you made, which I thought were very good, would still cause that problem in terms of the delay on 84 for those 2 hours is going to still make it frustrating for...
That's where the thick of your traffic is.
Yeah.
But like I said, if that gets posted, that's fine. But the only way to enforce that no right turn, or no through traffic. Right turn is easy. Anyone who makes a right turn, you're going to get a ticket. If you're a local, right? Sorry.
Yeah.
Don't do it. It's posted. Same thing with Andrade and Sheridan, right? No left turn, 3 to 7, Monday through Friday, right? The locals learned the hard way. They thought they'd get away with it. It's a black and white regulatory sign. We can't just give some people passes and some people not, right? It's a public road, but if you're going to put up the sign, it's enforced 100%.
Yep.
So same thing here. If you do a no right turn Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m., we'll come enforce it. But anyone who makes that right turn is going to get a ticket. My thing would be the through traffic is much harder to enforce because everyone's going to have to be stopped to know if they're through traffic or not.
Right.
And then the P.O. box situation is where you run into a lot of that. Well, then you're going to have to come in and you're going to have to show up to court and you're going to have to show your PG&E, smud bill, whatever you guys have out here, right? Look, I live here, right? So you're going to start carrying bills in your car just in case CHP decides to come out and work some enforcement.
So a P.O. box in Sunol is not proof of residency?
It's not proof of your address. You could just be coming to pick up the mail.
Yeah.
You can live in Fremont.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you.
So it's just one of those things that even if it's not us, right, you get somebody else because there's a call.
Yeah.
So they send that person out and that person comes out and it's not a hard address in the area. Someone's going to just write them a ticket and then people are going to get mad. I think a no right turn would probably be the best opportunity if you're really getting a lot of traffic on Main in the afternoons and then it's just enforced 100%. But then you may have people that come around and go down Bond Road.
Okay, Sean.
So
I'm going to give you the hook.
Sounds good.
Yep. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Amber, it sounds like you've gotten a little bit more information.
Yeah, thank you for the feedback. I've been taking notes and stuff. So I'll take it back to the office and then I will work with staff and we'll just put back to you later when you request them.
Okay. Well, you'll report back to me when we request it or when you have some more information.
Maybe like in a few months.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's June now.
We have some progress too.
To maybe report. October come back.
Sure.
Come back?
That sounds good.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Okay. Moving along. Okay. Item number 8 is the Community Wastewater System Feasibility Project. And there's Norm. I gave Shabana your presentation that you sent me this afternoon. I don't know if you've made any changes to it since then. Okay, so she could put that one up.
But I do have copies.
Copy?
The handout. So.
Okay. We'll take 5 here. Make sure everybody here is good, and if there's one for So Norm is with Quest Engineering, and he worked on the phase one feasibility study for all of Sunol. And we've asked him to, and funded him to talk about the downtown area, which is, we're believing, is the most urgent area to be addressed. I know that he's been doing some engineering work, and I've been out knocking on doors, so he's going to talk about what the status is.
Sure. Thank you. Norm Hanchy. I'm a civil engineer. I'm with Questa Engineering. We're located in Point Richmond and have been working, as Connie said, in the community on prior work, as well as with Alameda County. We're an environmental consulting water resources firm, and we do an awful lot of work with small-scale rural wastewater, as opposed to municipal systems. So work with the septic systems and county programs and small communities. Let's see. A little bit of background. Connie mentioned the phase one study. So the current phase two study really grew out of the findings and the information from the phase one study that was done basically between 2017 and 2021 when we finished the report. But that study looked into to identifying and evaluating some of the septic system issues in not just in the downtown Sunol, but up through Kilcare Woods and the other areas. Did some water quality sampling of Sinbad Creek and also looked at identifying some, you know, in addition to looking at what are the different problems or problem areas, what are some of the potential solutions, especially where could there potentially be a possibility of putting a community wastewater system in for those properties that are so constrained that they can't continue to work with their on-site system. And that study did identify county-owned parcels here in the downtown area. I guess that had been, you know, granted to the county from the railroads, and that includes the Depot Gardens area and the Bond Street parcel across from that, where the county uses for some equipment storage and other things. Also, the study did, so we looked at the capability of those areas, and some of you may or may not be aware, there is an existing leach field system that serves the Cerny building, the Bosco's, and is located at the east end of Depot Park. The other thing that the phase one study did determine was that amongst a number of different alternatives that were looked at, it did appear that the most cost-effective wastewater solution on a community basis would be in the downtown or for the downtown area centered around wastewater system located at Depot Gardens and Bond Street area. It's also pretty apparent that the downtown area with the businesses, small parcels, older systems are pretty constrained when it comes time to dealing with improvements, rebuilding, expansion, and commercial activities on those properties, having to deal also with on-site wastewater systems. I should say that the soil conditions are actually quite good in Sunol, but the area, the amount of area and the setbacks from between properties, property lines, creeks, streets, other utilities are what present a lot of constraints for maintaining on-site systems. So last year, the SCIC here did determine or act to propose that funding be granted to go to a phase two feasibility study, which is what I'm talking to you about tonight, which is digging into the possibilities and the feasibility and impacts and costs of a community system for the downtown area. So next slide, please. So a map showing the red on this overview is the area that we'll call our study area. It isn't necessarily it's the area that we're looking at that we consider to be the downtown area. Down in the right-hand corner is the school and the business district and where we are. But the study area also includes out Foothill, both to the east and to the west, or I guess it's kind of the northeast, as well as portions of Kilcare Road up past the Little Brown Church to some smaller parcels that are near the creek and potentially could benefit from a community system alternative. So next, there are 107 parcels in that area. So the scope of the phase two wastewater feasibility study just listed a series of tasks. Number one is getting more detail about the parcels, the characteristics of sizes and how their wastewater systems currently, what they consist of, how they operate, then field studies. And the field studies have been directed at determining in better detail the soil conditions, groundwater conditions, percolation, which is important for a community wastewater system that's based upon disposal into the ground. We're well into those and pretty much moving into task three in our work right now, formulating then wastewater alternatives based upon knowledge of where the biggest needs are and what the numbers of homes, and then how a treatment, how a collection system to bring the sewage from homes to the community wastewater site, how those might be constructed, and then different wastewater alternatives, different ways to treat the wastewater, different locations, different ways to dispose of it into the ground. Then once we formulate those alternatives, we do a comparative review, develop costs, check to see that just what's required to build any one of those options. We will also be looking in our task five at how do you go about financing a community wastewater system and then governing it. It isn't when you bring a group of homes together, convert from individual septic systems to a community system, you need to have some public authority operating that. And other areas dealing with small communities like this have often formed either a county service area or a special district under the oversight or under the governance of the Board of Supervisors. But there are other options as well that we'll look at. Task six is public outreach and agency coordination, and this is part of that. We can't just do the study without getting out in the community and explaining what we're doing and getting feedback and input. We want to have a successful outcome. And then finally, we'll produce a project report with our recommendations, which should be later on the end of this year. Next. So the file reviews, this is part of the service area evaluation that we've been doing. We've got from the county and have gone through all of the septic system files that the county has for parcels in Sunol and determined that there were 66 out of the 170 parcels actually have information. Most of them obviously are residential, 80%, but we have businesses, 8%, and some other mixed uses of making up the balance of those systems that have file information. We looked through the all of the different permit information and determined really what's on each property and when was anything done to the property, when was it built, the septic system, when was it last serviced or inspected or repaired, and it looks like about, by our estimates, 56%, so a large percentage of those that there are records for haven't really had any activity in 35 years or more, and smaller amount 25 to 35 years or 12%, and but about 19% have had something done. Maybe the system was repaired or built in the last 25 years. As far as the system status, and we use the terminology OWTS, that's the new terminology for septic system. It means on-site, or stands for on-site wastewater treatment system. But in going through the files, we looked at how the systems were built relative to their setbacks from creeks, the size, the capacity, and the overall compliance with county codes, and determined there, as you can see, about 18% of all of the systems that have permit information are substantially in compliance with the current codes. That means they're probably sized well and they're located well on the site. We found about 35% were non-compliant, and it's usually because of the size, lot size, and the setbacks. And then the 40% of the properties in our service area just don't have any documentation. So the thinking is that probably a lot of those are non-compliant if they're older than the records that the county has maintained. Next slide, please. This is just a quick overview of the study area, showing the light green being residential parcels. The church parcel shows up. There are just a few vacant parcels. And then we've got the county land between the railroads, and then the downtown business area with some businesses, some mixed use, multifamily, and the school in the pink there down in the right hand corner. Next. Another part of our study, and this is where Connie has taken the lead to get the word out and to actually inquire and solicit some input from members of property owners in the area as to their level of interest, and also just explaining what the study is being done and what I've listed here. And you'll see in your handouts, the titles in the right two columns were not completed. So I hand wrote those in, but we'll get to that. But basically the contacts that Connie was able to make so far totaled about 39 out of the 107 parcels in the area. And of those 29 were parcels that did have information, 10 where there is no file information. The important column is kind of in the center where it says, yes, interested. So a pretty good percentage of people, 22 out of the 29 contacted, said in the that we're interested in following. And it's not a commitment to participate in any project, but to the interest in assisting in the project moving forward. There were six where it says in the second to the last column, it says six total parcels. Those were parcels where they were asking for more information. And the final column on the right was the number of contacts where they said not interested, of which there was only one out of the 39 contacts that Connie made. So that's a pretty good response level. This is still in process, and any of you who want to contact Connie directly that may not have been contacted so far, and if you're in the study area, this would be quite welcome. Next slide. This shows that from that table where the properties are located that had indicated interest in the study. So it's the lime green color, which are the positive, yes, interested. The blue, I believe, was more information. And I think just the salmon colored parcel was large enough, had a compliant system, and not interested in participating further in the study. But this gives us an idea going forward, how far and wide is the interest all just focused down in the town area, and it shows that there's interest as you move out from the center of town, especially, and you can see the size of the parcels is a good indicator. Smaller parcels have more difficulty in the long run dealing with septic systems, and there is probably one reason for interest in whether a community system is possibly a long-term option. Next. Then the field studies. We've also conducted work out at Depot Gardens and at Bond Street, really to evaluate our initial assumption was from the knowledge of soil conditions in the area that it was likely we were likely to find good conditions, but we were out in February this year in the wet weather system, wet weather season, when we drilled like three borings down to 30 feet, and groundwater was found at 28 to 30 feet in those three borings at Bond Street and Depot Gardens, which is that's a good sign. That means you have deep, well-drained soils there. We did soil profile test pits to examine the near surface soils where a leach field would be installed and it would need to operate. We also did percolation tests and got a very desirable or favorable rate of 4 inches an hour, which we've classified as 15 minutes per inch of water drop. There are some setback and utility issues on both the east side of the Depot Gardens and Bond Street. Sinbad Creek would limit some area on Depot Gardens for the locating any wastewater facilities. And there are utilities in both areas. So conclusions from the field studies are that actually both of the parcels, Bond Street and the Depot Gardens, have really favorable conditions, deep, well-drained groundwater at a level that would not really interfere with any type of wastewater system for simple or standard leaching trenches up to about 10 feet deep. So that's good news for our study. So we have a lot of possibilities to work with on those parcels. The other thing we did is I mentioned before the leach field system that currently exists for the Cerny building. It's been there since the 1990s. So an evaluation was actually done of that last May, opening up some trenches to examine the and document the as-built conditions, doing some percolation testing, taking some deeper borings to look for groundwater, which wasn't found at that time. And ultimately, we determined that the Cerny building presently is using about four trenches out of 20 leaching trenches that were installed in that area some years ago. So that's a resource and a possibility for incorporating into it a different options for a community system. Next. This is just an overview showing where that testing was done. On the left-hand side is the old parking area of the Depot Gardens. And that's where I mentioned the 2,100 foot long leaching trenches are already installed in that area, but not in full use. And the Bond Street parcel is on the right-hand side there. So we're looking at both areas, and we'll be talking with the county about possibilities, but it also realize the uses in the gardens area will have impacts on potential impacts on the uses there. So next. So last slide here, our next steps will be into our tasks 3 and 4 to define different makeup of service areas and collection system layouts, then formulating some different ideas for treatment systems and for disposal systems that match up with what the needs, the wastewater flow that would be generated by all or some portions of Sonol downtown area. We're going to continue surveying and obtaining input from property owners, and there'll be another progress meeting likely this fall to talk about that additional work that we're working on right now. So bring us to questions. So.
More questions with the council? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you are still wanting to get more information from property owners?
Well, I think we're just open to,
Okay.
I don't think I think our attention really has to go toward the harder engineering or the evaluation of the treatment and the facilities. But just to have the word out there, and if there is interest, we want to take note of it and keep track of it as we go forward.
Just one quick question. I think somebody brought this up last time. So the cost, would the cost go down the more residences that are involved, or?
Yeah. Let me just talk briefly. So in a community wastewater system, your question is yes. There's an economy of scale and efficiency. If you have more people paying for the same, you need certain area. You need a piping system. And if you have more people on that piping system, the costs are shared by more people, and the costs for individuals go down. Ultimately, when something gets built, it's unlike what you might have to do on your own property. If you have to fix your septic system, you have to pay for it, and you come up with your own financing. In a community system, the public entity that would be the governing body, and we're thinking it's a district under the Board of Supervisors, they would have the ability to seek low interest loans or grants or sale of bonds and form an assessment district, so that those who are part of the system, if the assessment district passes, that secures the money to pay back the bonds or to pay back the loans, and the homeowner pays not upfront the cost that is required to build the system, but over time it appears on your tax bill over usually about 30 years for payback. So it doesn't hit, you don't get hit with $30,000 or $40,000, even though that might be what it takes for every parcel to be connected into the system. That's paid out over time under an assessment district financing program.
Thank you. So a couple years ago, the council went on a tour of the Lake Canyon. Yeah, in Los Gatos. Is that something that we could do, set up and do again if we wanted to?
Yeah, I believe that would be quite feasible. Lake Canyon is located near Lexington Reservoir. It's near Los Gatos, but it's Santa Clara County, and it was built as the name implies, it's a canyon right feeding into Lexington Reservoir. Lots of old homes, and it looks a lot like Hillcare Woods, about 60 homes on the system. And it was built in the 1990s. It still operates. They have a collection system. They keep their septic tanks on their property, and we just collect the effluent. So the effluent flows in a smaller diameter pipe and then to a pump station, and it goes to a leach field on land that was an easement from the Santa Clara County Parks district nearby, and it had suitable conditions. So it's a system with really low maintenance, and it had a lot of funding. So it was a very economical for this community, back in the 1990s when it was built. But it can be, we can visit it. We did the original design on it, and we continue to work with the district and do some monitoring and reporting. So we could set that up.
Is that something you might be interested in? It would have to be available to the public, but considered a meeting.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
If you don't, if you're not hooked up, if you're in that area and you're not hooked up to it, but you want to hook up to it after it's already hooked up, is that a possibility to do? Or how does that work? You have to decide at that time, or?
That happens. And the thinking is, and no hard decision has been made whether it's mandatory or not, but typically the projects that we worked with that have been successful, they make it optional to connect when the system is first built. Okay, and then you can take advantage of the assessment district financing and spread the costs out if you're getting on the ground floor, especially, and also if there are grants that lower the costs. But then anyone who doesn't connect and chooses to connect later, I think the system would be planned and designed in a way that would anticipate that possibility. So the capacity would be there, but the cost to connect later would be a lump sum, or it would, they would have to pay if it's 30 or 40,000, whatever that would be something in an ordinance, like later connections, this is the connection fee. So there's an incentive to be to get in on the financing.
So another question would be, so, you know, we're limited on a lot of it, like say if you wanted to do something to your house, it's, mm-hmm. it depends on your septic and right. that kind of stuff. Would that make a difference if you say if you wanted to put an in-laws quarters or something like that on your property? Would it be an advantage to hook into that system and then you could do it because you weren't just relying on your septic system?
Yeah, totally. That would be the intent, is to design the system and assess the properties and allow for, you know, not going around counting bedrooms, but
right.
And probably the way the housing laws are now with ADUs and with JADUs, that it could be that there's an additional assessment or maybe it affects your annual operation and maintenance, that you pay an annual fee also to operate the system. And it could be that there's an adjustment to that, but it would certainly, the ability to do it would be there, but the cost would probably have to be adjusted. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Norm.
Okay.
All right. Oh, did you want to ask one question?
No, I said that was a good question. I like
to yeah.
Question?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I know it's a long drive for you. So
all right. Appreciate okay. Okay.
On to item 9, compostable waste. Okay. Oops.
Good evening. My name is Andy Schneider. I'm the county's waste program manager in the county's planning department community development agency. Tonight, I'll present an update on the county's implementation of mandatory waste collection services in Sunol as part of our efforts to comply with Senate Bill 1383, the short-lived Climate Pollutants Act. Slide 2. SB 1383 was adopted to reduce methane emissions from landfills by reducing the disposal of organic waste like plant debris and food scraps. Too many residents and businesses are still mixing organic waste with trash rather than keeping it separate for local processing into compost. When organic material is buried in a landfill, it becomes anaerobic and generates climate changing methane. The alternative is keeping organic material separate and sending that to a local compost facility where they're able to make a usable agricultural or landscape amendment with no methane generation. CalRecycle is the state agency that has the authority to develop the regulations to achieve these goals. They monitor cities and counties to ensure that we're complying with the regulations. The regulations, as far as it relates to Sunol, is that they require 3-container mandatory curbside collection of trash, recyclables, and organics for all waste-generating parcels. Although many rural residents already effectively manage their organic waste through self-haul, on-site composting, or animal feed, providing a green organics cart for food scraps, plant debris, and untreated wood waste ensures that all residents have access to a convenient method for organics diversion from landfill. Slide 3. Most California cities already have mandatory three-container waste service. Alameda County has been working over the last few years to implement the required services in our unincorporated areas. In 2021, the Board of Supervisors approved the required organic waste reduction ordinance. CDA developed the waste program to approve or amend waste hauler agreements and implement, monitor, and enforce mandatory collection services. Last year, the waste program amended an existing agreement with Livermore Sanitation, and we were able to mandate service and expand a three-container service in the areas surrounding Livermore. Many residents were pleased with the additional services they now receive. However, we did hear from some rural residents, including some here in Sunol, that they could not reasonably utilize curbside collection carts. So in response to our rural residents' unique property situations, the county has amended our regulations to allow residents with complex property situations to continue to self-haul in lieu of curbside service as long as they certify with the county. Slide four. CDA has been preparing to implement mandatory three-container collection in Sunol and Castlewood. Pleasanton Garbage Service currently provides trash and recycling service in Sunol on a voluntary basis. The unincorporated region would move from voluntary to mandatory waste service, and all residents would get weekly trash, recycling, and organic service. Occupied residential parcels that are not yet subscribed will be mailed a notice to subscribe to curbside service or to certify with the county as a self-hauler. Currently subscribed accounts would have a blue-lidded recycling cart and a green-lidded organics cart delivered. Slide five. The most common compliance method would be direct subscription to curbside collection service. We've counted current PGS-served residents, and about 80% of the Sunol and Castlewood area already subscribed to trash collection. So we would be focusing on a remaining 150 parcels that have yet to subscribe or to certify with the county. In response to some residents that self-haul their waste to an existing commercial account or neighboring residential account, the county will also allow waste service sharing if within the same PGS-served area and approved by the county. That means you may have a commercial business in town with an active waste account and want to haul your sorted garbage, recycling, and organics to that account. We would allow that as long as they certify with the county. Waste haulers, PGS, are also closely monitored for SB 1383 compliance. Sunol is currently serviced by a split truck, which has a divider to keep trash and recyclables separate. This may give the impression that PGS is mixing your separated materials, but we can assure you that all three streams of materials will be kept separate until they reach their specific destinations. Slide six. As far as how it's going to impact Sunol, in previous advisory council meetings, we've heard the concern of waste containers left on the roadside after collection, possibly all year long. While we understand that long driveways and other property issues may make the proper storage of collection containers difficult, leaving them in the right-of-way is unsightly and a hazard for private and emergency vehicles. Storing waste containers in the public right-of-way for over 24 hours is a violation of the County Neighborhood Preservation Ordinance, and the county is prepared to address that issue through outreach, noticing of containers, and possible citations. The county is working with PGS to keep collection rates low and having more subscribers will help to keep rates as low as possible. The county will begin enforcement on waste generating parcels that either fail to subscribe for service or to certify with the waste program, but our focus will be on compliance assistance and not on penalties. Through better compliance, we will not only better manage our natural resources and reduce greenhouse gases, but we will also reduce fire danger and hopefully illegal dumping. In addition to the three container service, subscribed residents will also get three annual bulky item or extra garbage collections, holiday tree pickup, and household battery collection. As detailed in the agenda item, the county is planning to approve our agreement with PGS and implement in Sunol and Castlewood by the end of this calendar year. All current subscribers and those required to subscribe will be receiving mailed outreach prior to the program rollout. The county is dedicated to bring the required mandatory waste collection to this area in the most thoughtful and reasonable manner possible, and we will keep this council informed on our progress. Final slide. We are open to any questions or comments from the public or the council.
Do you have any questions?
I have a question. Okay. Having seen a couple of the trucks go by recently in the next couple of weeks, I'm not convinced it's a split truck coming up the road.
We are prepared to answer that question.
There we go. I just said I wasn't convinced. Convinced me.
Should have included a photo so that you can help me to.
Our truck is D54. All right. So last time Andy came and talked, somebody said, "Oh no, they're mixing it all together."
Yeah, yeah.
And so each of us went out the following week and harassed the garbage collection.
Yeah. I went out without letting PGS know that I would be out there on service day, observed the truck, got the truck number, actually pulled the truck over and discussed with the driver. He was very forthcoming. He let me climb on the side of the truck and showed me how he's able to flip a lever that directs the materials into the separated hopper. The way the residents can tell if it's a split truck is looking at the back of the truck. If there's a vertical line running up the back, that is the divider.
So what happens if I look at the back of the truck and I don't see the vertical line? Who do I call?
Take a picture.
Yeah, call you.
Photo and contact me. My contact's in the agenda item.
Okay. All right.
In all of my negotiations with PGS, they've been very upfront about that, and 1383 requires them to keep materials separated. So they'd be in big violations if they were to mix materials. Now, the organics truck that they will be adding to service Sunol and Castlewood will be a dedicated truck, which means it's not split, and they'll only be picking up the green-lidded cart.
Okay.
So I think Jim O'Loughlin had a question a year ago saying he doesn't really need the green organics cart because he manages it on site, and many people are doing that. It is, however, a bundled service. There isn't a rate reduction if you refuse the green cart or don't actively use the green cart. It's a bundled service, so there's not much benefit to that. We're hoping to get as many residents subscribed so that we look like we're not trying to skirt the regulations, but we're complying with the regulations.
So if somebody is self-hauling or self-certifying that they're hauling, that's for everything. It's not just for organics.
Correct. That
would
mean
you're either in it or out for all garbage.
You're either a subscribed curbside waste service or you're a self-hauler.
Question.
I need to write a chip if you want me to speak.
Go ahead.
I think the green waste thing is brilliant. We have this in SoCal. I'm shocked that we don't have it in Alameda County. It's amazing. The amount of kitchen waste and green that you end up not putting in the trash is fabulous. So I think this is great. And I think once you start it running, I think people here will just go, how did we manage without it? So awesome.
how do we self-certify if we've got someone that maybe it's just a single person in a small home and they go, hey, I have one sack of garbage that I take, you know, to my brother's house, you know, once a week or once a month. Is that feasible for somebody who would want to do that kind of stuff?
As long as the active waste account goes on record with the county saying, yes, we will accept the waste from this specific address, and we get approval of both the generating parcel and the receiving parcel.
That sounds complicated.
It won't be. There will be some dialogue and communication after the county sends out our notice to visibly occupied parcels that are not yet subscribed.
Okay.
And we'll have instructions. We just finalized the form that would be sent via email. Could also put it in the mail and mail it to someone if they did not have computer access. But then they fill out the specific fields in the form, and we either deny it or approve it.
Okay. Okay.
So is that little green or blue?
When is that effective?
We are planning to board approve a new agreement with PGS and implement by the end of this calendar year.
Is it a small container? Is it the same size as the other ones? Or what are we
going to be expecting? The collection cart is same size as the recycling. I think it's 64, maybe 96 gallons. It's large. And they will provide on request a small 3-gallon kitchen pail for indoor collection of food scraps that you then dump into your green cart for collection. They won't service the tiny pail on the curb. Now, we've all seen the compostable plastic bags at Ace Hardware and in the store. They keep everything nice and clean. Unfortunately, the compost facilities in Alameda County are not accepting compostable liners because they're not allowed to accept them in order to generate an organic, usable agricultural product. So what we're recommending is people put some plant debris at the bottom of your cart, dump your food scraps on top, and then everything falls out when the truck tips it. We definitely want to continue to encourage backyard composting, animal feed. Managing your organics on site is the most beneficial way to do it. But there are some organic materials and food scraps which are not backyard compostable. Cheese, meats, bones, and food soil papers. So as our audience member pointed out, it is surprising once you start collecting napkins, paper towels, coffee filters, and all your food scraps, your garbage is much smaller. So they will allow variable sizes of garbage containers. And if you're recycling and composting correctly, you could, in theory, reduce the size of your paid garbage can and your bill. So that's what we're aiming for.
Yeah.
Could I ask one question?
Sure.
Additional pickups, can you go elaborate a little bit on that?
City of Pleasanton, that has a franchise agreement with PGS, they get 3 bulky item collections. That's for like a large appliance that you wouldn't be able to get rid of, or actually excess bagged garbage. And they're allowing 3 of those scheduled pickups each year.
They would notify you when that's going to happen, or you would notify
that,
them?
That would be in the outreach that you get as a new PGS subscriber, that they would alert you that these programs are available, and you call and schedule your bulky or extra garbage pickup.
Right.
And that's included in your normal base rate.
Good. Thank you.
Question? What about yard waste?
Plant debris. The green cart is intended for any plant.
Trees, branches.
Yeah, there's a size limit on trees. And branches. It's probably going to be 3 or 4 inches. It has to fit in the cart. So people that have large properties may still need to self-haul with their pickup truck to the Pleasanton Transfer Station or Altamont Compost Facility or Vasco.
You can go.
There's no other option than a 96-gallon container. Is there any option to combine households? I mean, the number of containers is just crazy. Yeah, the street is lined continuously containers. If you're gonna add another huge one for every single household.
I will have to check with PGS what they plan to do for Sunol on size of containers, or hopefully offer a variable size depending on what you request. That doesn't really address the number of containers out there. Are you speaking of Kilcare Road, or are there other roads I need to be aware of?
It's primarily on Kilcare Road.
Yeah.
And the number is tremendous. And you know, one driveway may have 6 or 8 containers in front of them.
Yeah.
And a combined system somehow, if not allowed, and certainly if you get every single household has to certify that they have trash cans, there's no way to have a combined 3 households use one big container.
We are allowing that.
That is? Okay.
It's fairly unprecedented, but there's nothing in the regulations that said we can't do it. So we've created the program. It's called Waste Service Sharing, meaning some household has the service and pays for that and has the containers. And we are willing to document the addresses or parcels that are sharing those containers. We can't work with your neighbor to figure out who pays or how to make it fair or who overfilled it. But if you've got that community situation dialed in, we will allow it. We just want to know about it, because if we don't have a record of an occupied parcel, then the letters turn into a more enforcement thing, which we'd rather not do. Any other questions? Thank you. We will be in touch through Connie and the council, and also be on the lookout for mailed outreach. Thank you.
Thank you.
Andy has worked really hard to respond to our comments from the last meeting, and I really appreciate that, and trying to come up with solutions. I appreciate the whole county. I mean, it's probably not you, it's probably you and...
No, it was me.
Mr. Humble.
Okay, well, thank you.
Great, thank you.
Okay, going on to the next item. 10, election of chair and vice chair for FY26.
Money.
What?
Money for chair.
Can we nominate Benjamin for vice chair? He's not here.
I asked him and he said he would be okay.
Okay. We would love it all together. So, Kim, what do we have to do it separately?
Is that one separate?
Sure. I'll nominate Connie for chair and Benjamin for vice chair for FY2026.
Are you sure nobody else wants to?
Russ, too.
Do it.
Status quo, baby.
I'll second that.
Council member Claudette.
Approve.
Councilmember Camparolo.
Approve.
Councilmember Harrison. Excuse. Councilmember Stark.
Approve.
Chair DeGrange.
Okay.
Thank you.
The victim of their own success.
Bad conversation.
Okay. Approval of the minutes is item 11. We have the minutes from April 16th and May 14th. Let's do April 16th first. Anybody have any comments in the agenda from April 16th? Any corrections?
So I move that we approve the minutes for April 16th, 2025.
A second?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Councilmember Tolman?
Approved.
Councilmember Tolman?
Approved.
Councilmember Harrison, excuse. Councilmember Stewart?
Approved.
Chair DeGroote?
Approved. For the minutes of May 14th.
I'll do it again.
Okay. Any comments or corrections on this? Okay.
So I'll motion to approve the minutes for May 14th, 2025.
I'll second.
Councilmember Conan?
Approve.
Councilmember Kent Brummel?
Approve.
Councilmember Harrison, excused. Councilmember Stark?
Approve.
Charity Grange?
Approve. Okay. So next month is July. We have folks from UC Berkeley and UC Santa Cruz coming back to talk about evacuations. And the sheriff's office wants to come back and talk about enforcing fireworks. People are shooting off fireworks on their property. And I think there's one more that's, Jerry B. Miller might be back in July. We're not sure yet.
The date is the third one? 16th.
16th.
Isn't that number three?
Well,
yeah.
It'll be gone by then.
Yeah, it's a little on the fireworks, I know.
But yeah, well, the Fairview Council is the one who's asked for the change. So that's all happened before the 4th. So he's just letting us know about it. Because there will be a third or fourth.
Third Wednesday in July is the 16th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. So there are some people who think that members of the audience should speak only if they have put a party. Sometimes that's challenging because there's people in the audience that we all know and they just have a quick question and want to have it answered. Do you have any thoughts on that?
As long as they order, I don't have things about quick comments because they're quick comments.
Quick questions.
And I think it just keeps it running smoothly rather than paper and people walking back and forth. That's my opinion. As long as you don't let it get out of
Yeah.
I mean, occasionally there's like a packed audience because there's some topic that is really important. People just keep going and going. Maybe that, I don't know, maybe to, but it is nice. We're such a small, we're a small group. So
we know everybody.
It's nice to have like kind of a town hall-ish. Yeah.
I think if it's under control, if it's a small group and people are respectful and they have a quick question, I think it's okay for a quick question that came up in the process and they didn't run back and have to run up for,
mm-hmm.
You have something you want to say at the beginning, fill it out. Absolutely. But yeah, we are a small town. It's a small meeting. And unless there's a huge issue and places packed, I don't have a problem.
I agree.
A quick question.
Can I ask a question?
What is the etiquette for putting in a question, you know, while someone's speaking, if you want to ask them a question, or I'm not sure how that works, as opposed to if you have a statement you want to make, then it's clear.
If you have a statement you want to make, you have to fill out one of these. But sometimes people say they have a quick question, but they're better at a statement in that question. It's hard to tell. It's hard to manage.
You know, if someone's speaking,
guest speaker, right?
Yeah, a guest speaker. And you would like to ask them a question, and you didn't come up with a question until then. I mean, you know, we can. I don't really know what the etiquette is there.
You can always bring it up until
we always bring it up at any moment until the first you go on.
Yeah.
Really.
Okay. Yeah. And you'll go first on the list. Okay. So I think we're adjourned. Everybody got it.